Acts 15. Last week we were looking at Paul and Barnabas going up to Jerusalem to take care of this matter of false teachings, false doctrine creeping in within the church. And we're going to be continuing our journey here today. I'll call your attention back 2 weeks ago. We looked at the simplicity of the gospel that Paul and Barnabas was preaching and the simplicity of the churches that they planted, right?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
So we looked at the simplicity of it. Like I said, last week they were trying to complicate it, trying to add the law and add the works and everything in on top of that, all that false teaching. And so Paul and Barnabas had, like I said, to go up to Jerusalem, to the place that supposedly the false teachings was coming from, right? The Judaizers was going to him and saying, oh, the church at Jerusalem sent us to tell you these things. And so they went to the church at Jerusalem and got a signed letter saying we said nothing of the sort, right?
Right.
And that this is the gospel. And so they fended off Satan's attack and his attempt there to complicate things. And he put the false teachers in their place. And so if they would have fell for this last week, it would have completely changed Christianity and would have turned it into a system of rule-keeping, which you still see in a lot of the religions today. Satan didn't give up on that one. He didn't throw it aside just because it didn't work in the region of Galatia there. And so as Paul and Barnabas stood firmly against it, they brought about a ruling on the matter from the prophets and the leaders in Jerusalem. And since Satan's plan was thwarted and the false doctrine was refuted, Satan, like I said, he doesn't give up easily.
Right.
He still had that trick in his bag. He used it elsewhere. He's still using it today.
Yeah.
But within the churches of Galatia, he still needed to try to destroy them in some way.
Yeah.
We talked last week a little bit about their zeal that they had, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if he could do something to get rid of that zeal, to snuff out that flame that they had burning within them, so to speak. And so we're going to see his next attack today. Here in the end of chapter 15. So look with me, if you will, in verse number 35. And it says, Paul also and Barnabas continued in Antioch, teaching and preaching the word of the Lord with many others also. And some later, and some days after, Paul and Barnabas, why did I start this one again? And some days later, after, Paul said unto Barnabas, let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do. And Barnabas determined to take with them John, whose surname was Mark. But Paul thought not good to take him with them, who departed from them from Pamphylia and went not with them to the work. And the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder one from the other. And so Barnabas took Mark and sailed to Cyprus. And Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren unto the grace of God. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, confirming the churches. And so we see here the next attack of Satan. And we find, just as a little bit of a background on it, in verse 35, that Paul and Barnabas continued in unity there in the church of Antioch after all these things had happened. And so they were preaching there, teaching them the truths of the faith, contending for the faith, as we look at in Sunday school. And they helped the church at Antioch to heal from this attack that was against them, right? Because it was also in Antioch, not just in Galatia, but in Antioch that the Judaizers was bringing these false doctrines. They got it settled. That was fixed. And so they spent some time healing the tensions that was there, because in Antioch, there were Jewish believers and there were Gentile believers together. And there had been a division that was developing there. And so with this, everything was being healed and the people were being edified. And so there was also many other capable men that were in Antioch. Look with me here at the end of verse 35. It says that they were preaching the word of the Lord with many others also. They weren't the only capable preachers in Antioch. There were other men there that were capable of leading the people and of teaching the people and encouraging the people. And so Paul wasn't one to concentrate or bottle up or to overpopulate a church with preachers while there were other places that had no preachers.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at Romans chapter 10, verses 14 and 15. It says that faith cometh by hearing, hearing by the word of God. And it goes on to say let me just turn over there because I'm going to completely mess up the quoting of it. Romans 10 and verse 14. It says, how shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe on him in whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach except they be sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of them that preach the gospel of peace and that bring glad tidings of good things. And so the theme of that is, how shall they hear without a preacher? And so there's many people who didn't have a preacher, and so plenty of them in Antioch, and so Paul says we need to go where there is not. Right? We can flip over a few pages there to Romans chapter 15 and verse number 20. And Paul's kind of giving his missions philosophy here. And he says, yea, so have I strived to preach the gospel, not where Christ was named, lest I should build upon another man's foundation. So he says, I've tried to go where no one else was at. And so in Antioch, there were plenty of other preachers there. And so he said, it's about time to move on. I've got work to do. There's people who haven't heard. And so in verse 36, Paul shows his concern and his heart for all those baby Christians, which he had left after just laying a foundation through the regions there in Galatia. And he was very well aware of the Pharisees and the legalists that were still trying to corrupt them. That's why he wrote the book of Galatians, right? And so now that he had a letter from Jerusalem, as well as having the church there at Antioch healed up and recovered from that problem that they had had, what better time for him to go forward and to spend more time and to disciple and to encourage those churches in Galatia, right? And so this was his idea here in verse 36. And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do. Let's go check up on them. I'm worried about them. I'm concerned about them. I want to make sure that they're still going along. They're still keeping in the faith because, hey, we weren't there for very long. We weren't able to really root them and ground them and teach them a whole lot. Let's go make sure that these guys aren't corrupting them. Let's go make sure this letter that I sent, this letter of Galatians, let's go make sure that it worked, right? And so, as he did this here, he had this desire, this burden for them to disciple and to encourage them. John wrote in 3 John 1 and 4, he says, I have no greater joy than to see that my children walk in the truth. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, that was John, and I believe Paul had the same heart. He liked to see his children in the faith walking in the truth. That was a joy to him, and he wanted to go back and encourage them throughout this region. Yeah. And so, we see here that Satan's trap has been set, though. This is our first point here, Satan's trap. Because in verse number 37, it says, and Barnabas determined to take with them John, whose surname was Mark. We remember Mark, don't we? Mm-hmm. Mark was following them along on their journey, and they got to the place called Pamphylia, and for whatever reason, Mark abandoned ship, right? Yeah. He left them, he went back to Jerusalem, or went back to wherever he was from, and he quit on their mission journey here. And so, on this second trip, Barnabas was excited about it. He was all for it. And Paul and Barnabas had kind of been a dynamic duo. They had spent between 1 and 2 years on this journey, and then about another year or so in that region there with Antioch. So they've been together. They've been the dynamic duo for probably 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. That's quite a bit of time invested, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so he puts this idea to Barnabas, and Barnabas says, hey, I'm all for it. This is great. Let's go. But I want to take Mark with us. You remember Mark, my cousin over here? Mark was Barnabas' cousin. He said, remember Mark, my cousin? Yeah, how could I forget him? He says, I think we need to give him a second chance. We need to take him along too. And so he had abandoned them along the way, but Barnabas was always one that was willing to give a second chance. If you realize, if you remember here, whenever Paul got saved originally, whenever he was Saul of Tarsus, got saved on the way to Damascus. He came to Jerusalem after that, and nobody would even entertain the idea that he was converted, that he was saved. They were all skeptical. They were all fearful, and they said, it's a trap. It's a trick. He's coming. He's going to expose all of our house churches that we have and all of our leadership, and then he's going to bring his Pharisees and his guys in, and he's just going to slaughter us all. We don't trust him. And so Barnabas comes to Paul, talks with Paul a little bit, and kind of sticks his neck out a little bit. And he hears Saul's testimony, and he hears about how he's preached in Damascus, and he hears all these things, and he sees Saul is genuine. And so Barnabas comes to the Jerusalem church and argues Saul's case and says he's genuine and brings Saul along and gets him welcomed in there, right?
Yeah.
Gets Saul of Tarsus started off as being Paul the Apostle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Barnabas had done. This is what Paul and Barnabas, this is where they first started out at. And I can imagine Barnabas saying, hey, remember I gave you a second chance?
Yeah.
And so anyway, Barnabas was always up for giving someone another chance. He didn't hold grudges, it doesn't seem like.
Right.
And maybe it was that Mark came to him whenever they went to Jerusalem and was telling about all the things that had happened, and he was starting to get that zeal back to him again. He was starting to get a little bit of excitement hearing about all the things that God did for Paul and Barnabas after Mark left him.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark's like, man, I missed out. I should have stayed. And he had regrets, right?
Yeah.
And so he said, this time I'm not going to make the same mistake. I want a second chance. Take me with you this time. I want to see all those churches that I missed out on seeing the first time. I want to go and be a help to you. I want to go and minister. And so we see here in verse number 38, but Paul thought not good to take him with them, who departed from them from Pamphylia and went not with them to the work. They had a disagreement. They had a difference of opinion. And so as he had a different opinion on this situation, he was firmly against taking Mark along. Right? And we have no idea why. We don't know. It could have been that he was just ungracious and that he was bitter toward him. I don't know. We don't usually think of Paul being that way, do we? After all, what we read in Sunday school is we looked at Galatians 6:1. Guess who penned that? About restoring such a one.
Yeah.
Right? So he doesn't tend to be ungracious, but maybe he had good reasons. Maybe he feared that Mark would leave them in a tight spot. Maybe the first time he caused issues whenever he left, right? And he was afraid that maybe what the results would be if Mark abandoned them again. Maybe he feared for Mark's safety, because you remember the first time that Mark went with them, this was Paul's first trip. This was his first experience at doing this. He was learning as he went, right?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know what to expect. And so at the place that Mark left them, they were actually getting ready to go through a very dangerous and inhospitable area. Rough territory, robbers, thieves, all kinds of stuff, and diseases and things. And so maybe Mark chickened out because of that. And now Paul's been beat, he's been stoned, he's been all these different things. And maybe he feared for Mark's safety and said, it's a dangerous place, don't think Mark can handle it, don't want to see him get hurt. And so we're not taking Mark this time. Or maybe he just was looking at Mark and said, I still don't think he has maturity. I don't think he's able to handle it. These are speculations, I don't know. These are reasons that he might have said. And so he doesn't have the maturity that's necessary for the ministry. I know what it involves now, so I don't want to take Mark with us. And so Paul is much more aware of what it involves than he was the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he may have had very good reasons and said, no, we're not taking him.
Yeah.
Can't do it, not putting the boy in danger. Because it seems as if he was still very young. And so I'm sure that there was a lot of discussion that happened about this. Paul and Barnabas talking one with another. They spent several years. They've been, you know, many, many hours walking along the trails and the roads and everything, ministering many nights, laying in bed and discussing things and stuff like that, right? And so here they were talking. And after much discussion, both men stood firm. Barnabas says, I want to take him. Paul says, I'm not taking him.
Right.
And so there's a difference of opinion.
Yeah.
Difference of opinion here. And that has caused many problems down through the ages, hasn't it?
Yes.
Men who stood on different sides of an issue. And so Satan had failed in corrupting the church through legalism and heresy.
Mm-hmm.
But now he would try to do it through division. If he could cause a rift between Paul and Barnabas, between the dynamic duo, the two leading missionaries of the day, the ones who had planted these churches that they were looking at and relying upon, if he could cause a rift, could cause division between the two of those, he could shake the foundations of all of these churches that they had planted.
Yeah.
After all, these are very young Christians.
Yeah.
All of them had been saved 3 years max.
Right.
Many of them maybe 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they see the ones who come and brought the gospel to them fighting like cats and dogs, they're going to question everything, right?
Yeah.
And so Satan's got his plan. He has laid the trap. And so he could inflict a lot of danger, a lot of harm on all these young churches, all these young Christians. And so the question becomes, would the stubbornness that was an asset when fighting against false teaching be the very thing that destroyed them now? Because sometimes it's good to be stubborn, right?
Yeah.
It worked with them whenever the false teachers came, whenever they were standing for the truth and they were refusing to relent upon the Judaistic teachings that you must keep the law and become a Jew, right? They would not budge an inch on that. And so Satan says, I've got my idea now. Mm-hmm. They won't budge an inch. Both of them are stubborn. So if I can get them to have two different opinions,
right,
two different perspectives, two different preferences,
mm-hmm,
if I can do this and cause a rift and a blow up, I destroy it all. It all comes crumbling down like a house of cards, right? This is what he's trying to do. And as I said, the same scenario is played out repeatedly through the centuries. We must stand resolute and stubborn against false teaching, right?
Right.
We saw with Paul and Barnabas, they stood resolute against it and they called out the false teachers. There was no room for compromise. There was no room for backing down. As we talked about in Sunday school, they were contending for the faith. But now, are they contending for the faith?
Mm-mm.
They're contending for personal preferences and opinions, right?
Right.
And that's not something to stand as strong on, but they are. They both have their opinion of how things should work out. And so, what do we do with matters of opinions and preferences? How do we handle this? Because we can't stand as firm on it as what they did with doctrine, right?
Right.
But many men have. As a matter of fact, I don't encourage you to go looking, but you can go online. Don't do it, but you could. Of many different battles and fights between preachers online,
yeah,
over preferences and opinions.
Right.
This one attacking this one, this one attacking this one. It's not about doctrine.
Right.
Preferences and opinions. And they'll tear each other to shred about unimportant things.
Right.
And so, I've seen it done before. Without going online. But anyway, they'll tear themselves apart, tear each other apart, over minor differences and disagreements.
Right.
Their overall opinion is, if they don't do things exactly like me, they must be evil.
Yeah.
They're wicked and we have to warn them. We're contending for the faith. No, you're not. You're contending for your preference.
Right?
Right? And as you said, pride.
Mm-hmm.
Only by pride cometh contention, right? And so remember that we're called into unity, not uniformity.
Right.
Unity, not uniformity. And so Satan had set his trap. The two men of great influence were firmly standing on different sides of a matter. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And both of them were unwilling to yield, and it can easily, easily be a recipe for disaster.
Okay.
So what are they going to do about it? The trap is set. Do they fall for it? And so, as we look at this here, we find their decision. It comes to a head in verse number 39. We see here verse 39, it says, "And the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder, one from the other. And so Barnabas took Mark and sailed to Cyprus. Paul chose Silas." This is how it was reconciled, so to speak. This is what they come to. Did they compromise? Did one relent? Did anyone win? This is what we're trying to figure out here. Whenever we look at the phrase, contention was so sharp, what do we think of? Honestly, we imagine this to be an epic showdown, don't we? We end up thinking of it as being a knockdown dragout in the church car park. Right? The contention was so sharp. Yelling match. In front of everybody. It's just an absolute... That's what we think of when we think about the contention being so sharp. And that's exactly what Satan wants.
Exactly right.
He likes knockdown dragouts in the church car park.
Uh-huh.
And so anyway, I don't think, I hope not at least, that this isn't what Paul and Barnabas did.
Right.
Think about who we're talking about for just a moment. Two apostles, two men of God that had spent a lot of time together. Are they resorting to blows? Maybe, but I don't think so. I don't think this is what this is talking about. I don't believe this is what they were doing. Whenever it talks about the contention being so sharp, their differences of opinion were not able to be reconciled. There was so sharp of a difference between them. There was so much of a chasm in between them that they could not reconcile it. Okay? Not that they were coming to blows. It was just there was no common ground. They could not meet in the middle. Okay? As a matter of fact, on that, two opposite opinions here, one would have to relent for them to remain together, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Because if Mark stayed home, Paul won. If Mark went, Barnabas won.
Right.
And so we often look at this and we think they didn't compromise. Right? Isn't that how you always look at it? They didn't compromise. They both stood firm on their position, and it caused them to get mad and leave each other. Or is that just me?
No.
It's kind of how we look at it, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
But think about this. At the end, Mark went, but not with Paul. Right?
Right.
Did they compromise? There was no way for them to stay together and take Mark, but they could take Mark if they separated. Okay? So they made their decision here. And since neither of them would compromise, rather than destroying one another or the ministry that God gave them, they went in different directions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They went in different directions. This is important. They went in different directions geographically.
Right.
Not spiritually.
Right.
They didn't lose their unity, but they resolved their partnership.
Right.
You see the difference here?
Mm-hmm.
And so they went in different directions geographically, but the same direction spiritually. They both went on serving God.
Mm-hmm.
This is honestly how it should play out. Should they not?
Mm-hmm.
But often it doesn't work that way. If it comes to blows in the church car park, check on them 5 years from then. Where are they at? Probably neither of them are serving God, right? These men went different directions but continued serving God faithfully. And so I can imagine Barnabas finally saying, Paul, there's no way we're going to be able to come to a solution on this where we can stay together anymore. I can imagine him saying, you're determined not to take Mark. I'm determined to take him. So it seems like the only option that we have is for us to go in different directions.
Yeah.
I'll take Mark. I'll go to Cyprus. And you go ahead to the Galatia, I'm sure among all these men of God in this church, you can find someone to replace me. And they say, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And Paul says, okay, we'll do that.
Right.
Contention settled, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe it was Paul that brought it up first. And maybe Paul said, Barnabas, I just don't think we're going to be able to get this together. I don't feel right about taking Mark, but you're determined to take him. It's going to be such a hard journey. And so why don't you take him somewhere maybe a little bit safer until he gets a little bit more experience under his belt, till he grows a little bit more in the Lord, and after he grows a little bit more, after he gains some more experience, then maybe we can have him join up. And so you go ahead and take him someplace easier. I'll go to the places in Galatia because you know how difficult it is there.
Mm-hmm.
And Barnabas says, okay, that'll work.
Yeah.
And they settled it like men.
Right.
They settled it like adults.
Yes.
I believe this is the way that it played out. And so as we read this passage and we try to read the hostility into it, we're trying to get kind of our fleshly mindset into that, right?
Right.
We get our pride in it. We start reading our own feelings into it a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And we get this hostility and we concentrate on the physical separation in this. They were just, both of them refused to give and neither of them would work it out. And so they just got mad and they said, I'm taking my ball and going home.
Yeah.
Is that how we've got it pegged in our mind, right?
Right.
And so whenever people read this and whenever I've heard it preached in the past, it's always on the separation, the contention. And there's always somebody wanting to bash Paul or Barnabas for being so stubborn and hard-headed.
Right.
And for ruining the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what happened here. You know that? It's not what happened. Although there was a physical separation here, I don't think their relationship was severed. I don't think there was any animosity. I don't think there was any hard feelings between them. I don't believe that Paul was going out and trying to enlist people onto his side. He's going out amongst the church at Antioch and saying, can you believe he wants to take Mark with him? That traitor, that deserter. Running down Barnabas. And Barnabas is saying, you know, after I gave him a second chance, he won't give Mark a second chance. And all of them talking, and you got Barnabas' side, and you got Paul's side, and the church is about to... That's not what they were doing.
No.
Right?
No.
It's not what was going on.
Right.
I think they're a great example here. I think that, honestly, although we often look at it as not being a compromise, that's exactly what it was. That was the only way that both of them could go forward, and both of them could do what they wanted to. Paul went and checked on the churches in Galatia, and Barnabas went on checking on churches as well, planting churches, seeing people saved, and he took Mark, Paul didn't.
Right.
It worked out, right? They could both disagree and still move forward for God.
Right.
I don't believe that, like I said, there was any hard feelings. They weren't slandering one another. They weren't demanding people to choose sides. They disagreed agreeably.
Right.
And so it's a sign of maturity whenever you can hold a differing opinion, a different preference from someone else,
right,
and still get along with them.
Right.
Sign of maturity. Whenever you can handle people having opinions different from your own, nothing makes it necessary for Christians to always agree and to think alike. Mm-hmm. You know that?
Yeah.
Nothing makes it necessary. And so we should first seek the truth. They did that last week, right?
Right.
Make sure you're biblical.
Yes.
And then after that, compromise whenever you can. And if you can't stay together in your compromise, then respect their right to their opinion and put some distance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing says you have to quit. Nothing says you have to turn on that person or make them your target. And so we can respect other people's right to their opinion. And even within a church context, we don't always have to agree on everything. You know that?
Right.
To be a church, we need to we need to agree on key doctrine, right?
Right.
But after that, we can hold disagreements and disagree agreeably.
Yeah.
We can debate them from time to time, even if we wanted to, right? But nothing says it has to blow up and cause disaster.
Right.
And if it gets to the place where you have a disagreement with me or with the church or whatnot, come to me, talk about it.
Right.
If we don't get it worked out and you just can't stick around, then go somewhere where you can agree with.
Right.
And still serve God wherever you're at.
Right.
Okay? And so, that also carries into personal relationships as well. Not all disagreements have to be resolved.
Right.
We get this mindset that anytime that we disagree, we must argue this out until they see it from my perspective. Why? Not all disagreements must be resolved. It comes back to disagreeing agreeably.
Right.
So the last thing that we're going to look at in this is they've made their decision, right?
Mm-hmm.
Satan set his trap. They made their decision. And now we see that God's providence in the whole circumstance. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We can see that God's hand is at work even in a less than desirable situation. I don't think that contention or division is ever God's plan.
No.
Never God's will. It wasn't God's plan for Paul and Barnabas to argue. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But did you notice in all of this, all the time that was going on here in the passage that we read, did they ever stop and ask God what he wanted? Do you think God had a will for the situation? Do you think he had a purpose? Did they ever ask? They didn't ask, right? I found that interesting. They never sought God's will in it. All these other times they're seeking God's will, and they're standing fast on principles, and they're doing all these things. And this time it comes up. If they had prayed about it, if they'd sought God's will, would he have revealed to them whether or not to take Mark? It makes things a little more interesting, doesn't it? They could have prayed about it, and God would have revealed to them, take Mark or don't take Mark. But they held their differing positions, right? And so God obviously did have a will whether or not Mark went. And if they'd asked, God would have showed them, but they didn't.
Right.
And so we have a lesson that we can learn from this. Because how often do we fear or despair thinking that we messed up too badly that even God can't fix it? Or how often do we fear to even make a move? That we're just going to stand in one place, we're not going to move because what if we mess up? I've been there. And we fear that one of our missteps could ruin everything. And I kind of liken it to walking a tightrope. Oh, I'm trying to find God's will here. Lord willing, we'll look at that more next week. But anyway, I find great comfort in all of this passage here. This is one that people look at as fighting and contention and separation and all these things. But I find comfort in it. Why? Because if you start reading in verse number 40, it says, "And Paul chose Silas." We're enlisting new workers, aren't we?
Right.
"Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren unto the grace of God. And he went to Syria and Cilicia, confirming the churches." Chapter 16. "Then came he to Derbe and to Lystra. And behold, a certain disciple was there named Timotheus, a son of a certain woman, which was a Jewess and believed, but his father was a Greek, which was well reported of by the brethren that were in Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go forth with him." You see how the crowds are growing. See how Paul is taking on more people to share in the ministry, to grow, to disciple, to strengthen. See how this is working? God's blessing didn't stop whenever they had their falling out.
Right.
And God didn't cease to work through and in them whenever they had their falling out. They may not have prayed and asked God, "Do we take Mark or not?" But God was still with them, was still working. He worked all things together for good in spite of Satan's plan and in spite of man's failures. Remember, Satan is always a loser.
Right.
Never forget that. Satan is always a loser. But also know that it wasn't Paul and it wasn't Barnabas and their superior planning abilities. Right? They didn't have it all worked out. There's a movie that we watch sometimes. It's a silly movie. But there's this one guy here, and he's always saying it was all part of the plan. He just dumbs into things. And then he takes credit for it and says, "Yeah, I planned it that way." Paul and Barnabas didn't do this. It wasn't part of their plan, but look at how things worked out. As a matter of fact, if you ask them about this situation, if you could ask Paul and Barnabas right now, what about that time there in Antioch, whenever Paul wanted to go to Galatia and Barnabas wanted to take Mark and he wouldn't take Mark with him and you all had to, you know, your contention between the two of you. They'd say, "Yeah, that wasn't good. That wasn't one of my brightest moments. I really should have prayed about that." Right?
Yeah.
I bet they have regrets. If you could ask them about it now, they'd be embarrassed by it. But in spite of that, now look at where we're at. We have two teams.
Yeah.
We have Barnabas and Mark going one direction. We have Paul and Silas going the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
And they're continuing to encourage churches and to see people saved.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't stop.
All right.
The work wasn't halted. Nothing was destroyed.
Yeah.
Right?
Right?
No division, no contention.
Right.
And they went on serving God. We could argue over who was right and who was wrong, and many have.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, I think both of them were right in some things, wrong in some things, and we don't have enough detail to decide any of the rest of it, and it's not our job after all.
Right.
God never in His Word rules on either one's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so He simply shows us what He can do even through messed up and infallible people.
Yeah.
This is another example that even Paul and Barnabas. We think of Barnabas being the great encourager and Paul being the mighty apostle and both of them being men that sometimes didn't get along.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Even them weren't perfect. So Barnabas and Mark went on to do a great work. History and tradition tells us that after Cyprus, which by the way was Barnabas' hometown,
mm-hmm.
he went home, he went to his family, he went to try to win those that he knew.
Right?
Right? Mm-hmm. Took Mark along. And then history tells us that beyond there, he went into the northern regions of Africa and had great ministry throughout the northern regions of Africa, planting churches, winning souls there.
Right.
Why do we never read any more about him in Scripture? Well, because we find that Luke is the one that wrote the book of Acts.
Right.
He was with Paul
mm-hmm.
in Europe and in the Middle East, while Barnabas was on another continent.
Right.
So why is the focus on Paul? Because the writers were with Paul.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so anyway, they went on. They were doing great work. But we find something else important about this. We find that in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 11, he's writing to Timothy. Paul is writing to Timothy and he's saying, whenever you come, he says, bring Mark. Why? Because Mark is profitable unto me. Right? Paul has a change of heart toward Mark now, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Mark has went on serving with Barnabas. Also, Mark has spent some time with Peter. And Mark has matured. And he says, bring him. He's going to be a blessing. He's profitable to me. I'm sitting here rotting in jail. I want Mark by my side. Not in jail, but helping me.
Yeah.
Okay? And so he changes it there. And not only that, but Mark also goes on to write the book which bears his name, the Gospel of Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And he writes that.
Right.
And so Mark is matured, Mark is grown, and Mark becomes a man of God, a mighty man of God, in spite of all the situation. And so Paul and Silas depart. They go to the. They go with the church's blessing. Did you catch that in verse number 40? Being recommended by the brethren unto the grace of God. They still had the church's blessing. That is a sign that they maintained their testimony throughout the entire disagreement.
Right.
It wasn't a knockdown drag out in the church car park. Or they wouldn't have sent them with their blessing as they left, right? They would have said, get out of here. You're a mess. You're ruining everything. But no, it was, hey, we're happy to send you on. And so we'll have our team going this way, our team going this way. And everybody is still preaching the gospel, still seeing people saved, still seeing churches strengthened. And so they went on their mission to confirm churches, and they extended their ministry and came into Europe
mm-hmm.
on this journey.
Yeah.
And so along their way, like I said, in verse number 3 of chapter 16, they gained Timothy. And then if you go on further to verse 10 of chapter 16, they also gain Luke, another one. Because this is something interesting. You'll miss it if you're not careful. In verse number 10, it says, and after he had seen the vision, immediately we. Immediately we endeavored to go into Macedonia. That word we there changes. Changes everything because up until this point, it's always been they. Now it's we. You look at me like you're not understanding where I'm going here. The writer of the God, or of the book of Acts joined them. He had been talking about all the things they had been doing, and they had been going here, and they had been going there, and then all of a sudden, we are going places.
Right.
They pick up Luke, right there in verse number 10, and they head to Macedonia, which was in Greece, which is part of Europe. They'll later go to Rome and to Italy, to other parts of Europe. So in spite of the whole situation, the gospel, as well as the workers, were multiplied. The churches were not hurt, and the men were mature enough to keep their eyes on the work that was at hand and the one who called them to it.
Right?
Right? God orchestrated it all to work out, even through egos
yeah.
and bad decisions and Satan's snares.
Yeah.
And so, for us, be careful. Don't fall for Satan's traps.
Yeah.
If he can catch you up in his lies, he'll try. If he can't do that, he'll drive wedges between you and those around you.
Mm-hmm.
Always does.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he does. That's what he tries to do. As we talked about in Sunday school, he separates you out and tries to destroy you, tries to eat you up, right?
Yeah.
And so our final takeaway in all of this is to rest assured that whenever you serve God, even if you mess up, God is able to work it all out.
Right.
Even when you mess up.
Yeah.
God's able to work it out. And so go forward trusting him. God is bigger than any weakness you may have.
Exactly right.
And thankfully, I'm glad to say he's even bigger than our stupidity.
Yes.
You know that?
Oh, yeah.
Don't allow Satan to lie to you and tell you all these things that you're going to mess it up so bad that God can't even fix it. You're not that big.
Right.
But God is.
Right.
So look at all the things that he did through all of this. There was problems. The men handled them. Not necessarily even in the best way, but God still worked it all out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he can do the same in our lives as well.
Right.
Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Dear Lord, we come to you today. Thank you for your blessings, Lord. We thank you for this passage of Scripture, Lord, and we just pray, Lord, ask you just to help us to learn from it. Lord, I thank you for the way that you worked all the things out in this. And Lord, what a lesson it is for us and how that you can work out things in our lives as well. Help us, Lord, in the times whenever we're tempted to disagree, Lord, whenever there's times of contention and times of differences in preferences and opinions and whatnot, Lord, that we can behave ourselves as men and women, mature, Lord, that we can not cause a train wreck within the church, Lord, and within our relationships and those around us, Lord, but help us mature and follow you and allow you to use us, Lord. Help us never let disagreements or arguments cause us to quit on you or turn away from you, Lord, but help us to continue pressing forward, keeping our eyes on you, Lord, focusing upon you. Do be with each person in here today. I just pray that you'd strengthen their walk with you, grow them in their spiritual walk, Lord. Defend their hearts and their minds from Satan and his attacks. Be with those who aren't here with us here this morning. And Lord, I do pray for Mary if she's traveling, to be with her brother this morning as well. Just continue to be with her. And Lord, be with our time and our fellowship this afternoon. I pray your blessings on the food we thank you for as well. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.